pieces, but this is a different piece. Listening to the music of Simmel this morning. They're going to be opening for Dermot Kennedy at Upstate Concert Hall in Clifton Park, New York. UpstateConcertHall.com. Good morning. Welcome. It is a Monday. It's the 24th of February, and we're very glad to have you with us. On this Monday, we have a lot to talk about, so we will get going. Let me introduce everybody to you, and we'll start the roundabout. We go to Libby Post, political consultant. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
Good. Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration, Jim Hendler, is here. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Jim.
Very nice to have you. Sarah Rogerson is with us, Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo in the house.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. And WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Very good.
Are you passing notes in class?
Yeah, there's love letters.
Can we all read your note?
Right.
By the way, we've just had terrible news. I've just been told that Matt Bender died. A wonderful part of the Albany community who has done so much for so many people. And I know you feel the same way. Yes, Libby?
Yes. He was a wonderful guy. And it's a great loss for the Capital District and, of course, for his family. And, you know, our love goes out to Phoebe and the kids. Yeah. And, he will be remembered as one of the leading philanthropists of the Capital District, putting his money where it was needed.
88 years old and passed away on Sunday and had quite a legacy
yes.
that he has in this region. So, good morning, all. Welcome. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Any other address will not work, so please use that one. Panel at WAMC.org. Let us go to the topics today and where we want to begin, and that is... Well, we'll begin with the Nevada caucus. That happened on Saturday. We're still trying to sort out exactly what happened. We know one thing for sure, and that is that Bernie Sanders won, and he won decisively. Meanwhile, Pete Buttigieg, who I believe came in second or third, depending on how you look at it, or even fourth, is contesting some of the results. So that is going on as well. There were some issues, much like the Iowa caucus, there were some issues in Nevada, although not nearly to the severity, at least, of what we are being told now. So that leads us for several questions. One, Bernie Sanders goes into next Saturday, this coming Saturday's South Carolina primary, as a front runner. And then that is followed up almost immediately, by Super Tuesday. And you have Joe Biden, who did better. He said he would have to do well in Nevada and come in second. He did come in second. He was still way behind Bernie Sanders, but he did come in second. And there we go. So what does this mean for the Democrats as we go to South Carolina? And, of course, Super Tuesday. And then... Mike Bloomberg.
Right. Look, Joe, first of all, we know that Bernie Sanders is leading. You're quite right about that in the national polls, but he is not leading in the polls in South Carolina. But neither is Biden doing particularly well. He was way ahead, and now he's 4 points or 4 or 5 points ahead. So that's not real good, and it's gets to be margin of error stuff, and with the impetus that is going on for Bernie Sanders, he could well take it. He could well win over there. There's a vast number of people who are quite worried about Bernie because they think he can't win the election. On the other hand, you see, and I pointed this out in a column next week, that a lot of people have been, a lot of people who were unexpected allies are there. For example, a huge Hispanic vote for him in Nevada and other places. So he is to the left of the party. Now, there are those people who will tell you that in the very beginning, Bernie didn't have any prayer. But I think they discounted the idea that the people who voted for Trump wanted something on the outside. They were sick and tired of being treated and taken for granted. And some of them would have voted for Bernie. So there's a possibility that Bernie could win. We'll have to see if he gets the nomination.
Well, let's, you know, he has 31 delegates right now.
Right.
Which is 0.0077909.
Good. You're a terrific mathematician.
Right, I am. It's my phone that's
I was going to say, we're all sitting here looking at Libby's calculator.
Yeah, don't, not me. You know, so Super Tuesday will be we'll be able to tell what's really going to happen. And we have to wait for that.
Sure.
Yep.
That's what's really going to happen or what could happen?
Well, what's really going to happen, I think.
Okay.
It's going to, Super Tuesday, we will see a number of candidates drop out.
Well, you know, I have a whole bunch of friends who are watching this very carefully. I was talking to somebody on the phone about this. Look, the Bernie people are accused, I don't know if it's true or not, of not having turned out and been vigorous enough in the Hillary election. Had they, we are told, Hillary would have won. I don't know. I have no idea whether it's true, but that's... So let's just say Bernie gets the nomination, then those people will come out and vote for him who have been alienated up to now. On the other hand, if somebody else gets the nomination, will the Bernie people stay home again?
Well, that's exactly the question. And poll after poll is showing that a lot of them are going to stay home because if it's not Bernie, it's nobody. And that's really very short-sighted.
Rosemary?
Okay, so my sons, who like me were not Bernie supporters all along, sent me a note this weekend saying it's time to switch allegiance. We have to get behind him. So I've been practicing, but it's very hard because my heart is not in it. And Fareed Zakaria on his weekend show had this wonderful speaker, a young woman, Charlotte Alter, who wrote a book about the millennials.
Oh, she'll be on the show today.
Oh, she's so good.
Yeah, she's going to be on the show today.
And what she said about the millennials, because they matter a lot if Bernie is going to win. I don't think he can beat Trump, but if he can, it'll be because of young people actually turning out to vote, which, with the exception, as they keep telling us, of 2018, they never have. So she says, and I find this great, that voting for millennials is not a duty. Mm-hmm. They don't see it as something you have to do. Mm-hmm. It's an act of love. And if you don't love and identify with the candidate, you just stay home. And so this puts a lot of burden on millennials, and it puts a burden on those of us who do see voting as a duty, that we have to support him, even though he's not the person we would have picked.
And thus the results of not teaching civics in schools anymore.
Well, I keep pointing out, Libs, that that they teach civics down in Alabama too, and they don't teach it the same way.
Right, you know, we just don't. I mean, but we're not. I mean, when I grew up, when I was in school, you know, in the '60s, we were taught that voting was really important and that it was part of our being a citizen.
Our parents told us,
and our parents told us, and my parents took me into the voting booth. Sure. It was, you know, one generation after another, and we just don't have that.
I don't know that sense
of duty.
I don't know.
That's the way I can put it.
I feel like I teach a lot of millennials, and I feel like their sense of duty just is it lies in a different love of country. It comes from a different place. It's more they feel like it's their duty as Americans to stand up for what's right. And that voting for a moderate Democrat or somebody who has maligned their identity group is treason against their fellow Americans. And so, but all these things can be held together without necessarily demonizing the millennials, because I do think that there's just so much variety there. And then there are some millennials who really do feel that voting is a duty, but that they want to make sure that at the, you know, when they walk into the booth, that they can feel good about their vote.
So I think that walking into the booth right now, we can't even be sure that our vote will count. Our voting machines are widely hackable and out of date, and nothing is being done by Congress, certainly not by the White House or by Congress, to correct and rectify that. So I think that's a problem. I think that the Russians have continued to play.
The intelligence
community agrees with me,
they
too.
They absolutely
have. And it is not. I think it's to put Trump into office. I I don't think Bernie is a Russian agent, don't get me wrong. Mm-mm. But I do think that they, like the White House, have figured out that he's the guy to run against him and most likely
exactly. And to disrupt.
So I actually think
and
I
wait,
actually,
one more thing, please, and then I'll shut up. And that is that our party, the Democratic Party, is now under attack in the same way that in 2016 the Republicans were. And they the candidates themselves are not helping. Bernie cannot be beat when there's no viable alternative. And right now, there's so many people that there's not a viable alternative. It's not Bernie or somebody else. It's Bernie and a whole bunch of other people. And so he continues. He may well be on the path to getting the nomination.
Jim?
So, yeah, I was going to say, so I think the interesting thing about the Russian thing is I'm not convinced that the aid they're giving to Bernie is because they think it'll help Trump. I think it's because they think of the two candidates that are running. So Bernie will be so focused internally on the states, I think they can just do whatever they want outside the states. So,
or
so
even
in other
more.
Words, I don't think that they see him as pro-Russia. I just see him they see him as not interfering much, whereas with Trump, they see him as very pro-Russia.
That's,
so
that's
they would
possible.
Be happy with either. Plus, I think I heard some analysis by people who I think know a lot about this stuff who've been in the intelligence community for a long time. The other reason is you want to run the two opposite.
I know. Well,
I'll give it right back.
Okay.
Hey, I'm from New York. I'm happy to be interrupted. I just keep going anyway. But they also want the two polar opposites because that tears the country apart
right.
the most, and that really is their biggest yes. goal is the less effective
right.
we are
mm-hmm. or
locally than
the
less effective we are internationally. Yeah, all of the above. I agree. Yeah.
And whatever strategy wins is going to be a great one for them.
And Rosemary?
It's me. I apologize. I have an interruption problem. But I also think that one of the benefits for the Russians of supporting Trump and Trump and Bernie is that they are decreasing the power of the parties. And say what you will about parties, they moderate extreme positions. And so you decrease their influence and you end up with more whack jobs, which leads to less stability, and that helps Russia.
Not only that, there's been a lot of evidence presented over CNN and other places that the people down ticket are going to suffer if Bernie is the candidate because mm-hmm. they come from moderate, middle range places.
That's right.
You have a shot at turning the Senate right now, for example. So you got to consider all of that, too.
Well, and if this isn't depressing enough, the last analysis I saw shows that the current election, if things went exactly how they are predicted today by the sort of combined polling, so not any one poll, you would have the entire election would depend on Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And Wisconsin is currently leaning GOP fairly heavily. You would end up with 270 GOP electoral votes, 268 Democrat. And the other thing that makes me so cheerful about that is last year when we did the analysis, the only state where you could actually prove the suppression by the Republican laws had actually changed the outcome. There were a lot where you're mm-hmm. suspicious, was Wisconsin.
And there's only one person in this room who's written a book about Wisconsin politics.
Let me guess.
Really?
I wonder
who's
who that,
that
is. That's shocking.
Will the real writer of the... So, by the way, good job, Jim. That is depressing. Yeah, that was good.
Well, it was that or coronavirus, Joe.
Yeah, right.
It's only February. The election's
right.
in November.
That's right.
It's true. We have a long way to go.
Wisconsin, I just wanted to add is that people are passionate about their politics there, but they are thinkers. And they are capable of saying, no, I don't want this. I don't like what's happening here. So it's more than possible, Jim, that it'll change, that the rank and file there will change. Nixon, by the way, filled almost his entire administration with Wisconsin Republicans. I don't know if you knew that, Jarvis Leonard and all these other guys who came up there. And, it is a state that could go either way. If you spend time in Madison, I guarantee you it's like spending time in Ithaca. You wouldn't.
Yeah, it's true. It's very, very true.
Republican.
The other thing, of course, to come out about this is we touched on it, but when we look at the Russian interference, we obviously heard a lot about these stories over the weekend, that again, Russia not only helping Donald Trump, it could be helping Bernie Sanders as well. Jim, what do you make of this intel?
So, you know, I think the weirdest thing about this intel is that briefing happened. Then you had Trump fire the director of national intelligence. Now you suddenly have a whole bunch of people in the security community saying, maybe we overstated it. Strangely enough, the people who are saying maybe we overstated it are all people who either Trump put in or who are loyalists. So,
or who are scared and frightened.
And this is what I've been saying scares me the most, because what we've seen in failed countries, in authoritarian countries, is you start to have the intelligence community saying what they think the president wants to hear or the ruler wants to hear. This is how we ended up in Iraq. There was tremendous pressure on the intelligence community to support the Bush administration's beliefs in what was happening. But there were people within there who were doing it, but up at the top, they were not reporting things that they had heard from below.
And in this case, that made a huge difference. We have reports of widespread dissatisfaction in the intelligence community towards Trump. Now, that's interesting. And what's even more interesting is he immediately has put out the word, we're going to go into our agencies and we're going to clean out anybody who disagrees with us.
In fact, he said the entire government is ready to get rid of people.
Right. And that may be why we are watching what we're watching now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, in other words, what I see this as probably the most scary thing in the Trump space to date is filling all of these cabinet positions with loyalists, making sure that he has complete control over the government.
Or worse.
Making sure he's only hearing what he wants. You know, other people make sure he only hears what he wants to hear. It's very scary.
Or worse, there was a New Yorker profile of Stephen Miller. That came out that talked about how Stephen Miller actually manipulates the president on anti-immigrant measures.
And then there's the Supreme Court.
We're going to take a break, but we'll get to all of this right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. While we were away, the Dow opened. It has plummeted 844 points.
800 points.
It was just down at 850. It's now at 841. But it's only been 4 minutes.
This is something, by the way.
Happy Monday.
That Trump really has to worry about. Because the one thing he's been bragging about all along has been the very solid stock market, and it works.
Yeah.
But if it really takes a leap down, he's going to be in a bad position.
Well, the markets across the world have been in trouble today because of coronavirus, so we'll see how it plays out. We do have letters. We'll go to those, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
Tamara writes us, "Hi, dear panel. I respect Bernie and agree with all he says, but, capital letters, I've been angry at him from the beginning of his current campaign for his risky choice of words in describing himself as a democratic socialist. If he had only chosen the term social democrat, he would not have worried myriads of independents and moderate Democrats. Unfortunately, the word socialist is toxic in the U.S. He has given silly fodder to Trump and his base." And that's from Tamara in Springfield, Massachusetts. That's tomorrow. Okay, so...
Creeps at its petty pace.
Yeah, so that's interesting. He calls himself and always has a democratic socialist. He's a socialist. He has never accepted the Democratic nomination for running for political office.
He has not.
All these people say, well, he's not really, and all of that kind of stuff. It's really not true. This is what he says he is, and a lot of people seem to like it. Okay, and we've also heard from Jesse, who says, electability. I'm so sick of hearing about voting for who's electable. That was what I and many others did last time, and look at how it worked out. Vote your passion, Jesse.
Wait, no one voted for electability last time. Everyone assumed it was going to be Hillary. Mm-hmm. That was not even an issue. That this is revisionist history, listener.
And not only that, think about what happens if this guy gets elected for another term. Yeah. I mean, it's anything frightening. You've seen is going to be minor league compared to what's coming next.
When we left, we were talking about the Supreme Court, and one of the justices, the liberal justice, made a warning this week in a dissent.
Sotomayor.
Exactly, that the court seemed to be bending over backward to help one litigant in particular.
And he'll get at least two more if he's elected for 4 years.
On an immigration case regarding the expansion of public benefits, admissibility grounds for basically blocking folks from getting a green card on a wealth test.
So I wish I knew who was most electable. In other words, let's say this letter rejects the concept of electability, which I do not. I think getting rid of Trump is really at the top of my list. However, think about this for a second. Who on the list can be elected as president of the United States? And you see, that's why so many people who I talk to are talking about Bloomberg. They're saying, he may have trouble with the Democrats, but he's not going to have trouble with the American moderate middle class.
Right.
I suspect that's so.
True, but of course, if the Democrats don't come out, if they stay home, that's what elected Trump
and right, and we were talking about that.
I mean, it's different groups of people. I mean, the demographics this time are so complicated that nobody is predicting very well, and probably a good thing given what the predictions.
Yeah. And now we're finally in a place where we can see what electability means. I mean, it's still too early in the primary, but that's what primaries are for.
Right. Right.
It's a test.
Right. We'll see what happens after Super Tuesday.
Well, we were talking before about the Bernieites. Now, do the Bernieites, some of whom, not all of whom, of course, I had voted for Bernie in the primary, some of the Bernieites stayed home. They didn't vote. Now, let's say Bernie doesn't get the nomination. Will they stay home again?
Yep.
Is that what happens?
It's all according how strongly Bernie gets behind the nominee.
That's right.
He's not the nominee
and it's
himself.
Also how much the perception. Right. The other thing is how much is the perception that it was, quote, stolen from him. You know, what I find interesting is I still talk to fairly knowledgeable people who have forgotten that Hillary went into the convention with more delegates, not including the superdelegates, had won the primaries in almost every state, and they still say it was stolen from Bernie. This time, if he goes in with the most, so if he goes in with 40% of the delegates, at the moment it's actually looking like he'll do better than that. But if he goes in without a first ballot win, people are going to see it as if he doesn't come out as the nominee, his people are going to really be up in arms about it being stolen, no matter what he says.
That's a sort of Trumpian lie. It's rigged. It's Trump. It's this or that. Yeah. Nevertheless, it is very, very problematic for the people who believe it. It isn't as if it's right or wrong. It's that they believe it.
That's the point I'm trying to make. Even though what happened last time, you can look at the numbers and see very clearly what happened. There's still this belief, this myth that it was
and so
I keep hearing people saying if they steal it again from Bernie, I'm like, well, if they steal it the first time.
I mean, this is what's happened in the 3 years since Trump has been in office, and prior to that, all of his rhetoric is that we've become inured to mistruths. And so then those of us who actually think we think, right? You know, the people that Jim's talking to, people that I talk to, they want to believe what they want to believe. So we've all become caught in the trap of bias confirmation and believing our particular set of facts regardless of what the facts really are.
And all of the campaigns many of the campaigns are capitalizing off of that, including Bloomberg's, unfortunately, right?
Yes.
And I think that that's where the Russians are getting a lot of their angles.
And so anyway, Lisa, now Lisa's from that place which some people call Poquag, other people call it
Poquick,
I don't know. Yeah. Good morning, panel. If Bernie is the candidate, he'll be called a communist and a socialist.
Yep.
Faux news is already doing it. He can't beat Trump. People will stay home and not vote. So that's the other side. will there be people who are so passionate about on the other side of Bernie that they won't vote?
Well, Bernie won't get the disaffected Republicans, who of which there are many who are disgusted by Trump.
Right. But they'll be afraid of him.
Right. They'll be afraid of Bernie, and he won't get the independents, you know, the people that are the swing.
So when you have Chris Matthews on MSNBC comparing Sanders' win to Nazis conquering France,
That was unfortunate.
And say it again, because I didn't get that.
Chris Matthews, yes. After they went to Chris Matthews during the coverage of Nevada when it was clear that Bernie Sanders would win, and he compared the senator's win to Nazis conquering France.
Yeah, I defended him because he's a journalist, and I said to my sons, who are just horrified him on his head on a platter, that you know, he's reading a book, and he gets into it. And don't we all do this? It's like then you see everything in terms of the book you're reading. And he made a very unfortunate metaphor. He was not really, when I listened to it, comparing Bernie and Hitler, but that's how it came off.
What did I hear there that bothered me a little bit? You know, I didn't want to say anything because he's a journalist. Hey, journalists make big mistakes. Yeah. It's something I keep pointing out on the Media Project, which you know, defenders of all things journalism always call me on. But
I think it's kind of human nature that you want to defend your profession, and I did. But I can see from the debate and what he actually said, this was definitely a mistake. I have no problem saying that.
And he needs to walk it back, but. Who knows?
And he hasn't yet. That struck me.
Yeah, that's the other weird thing about it.
And Dan Daniel says, Bernie, so will the moderates get behind and vote for Bernie if he's the nominee? Everyone is always asking the other way around.
Yes,
why
of course.
Are Bernie voters expected to vote for moderate nominee, but moderate voters are allowed to say if they'll never vote for Bernie?
Because the moderate voters we're talking about are not Democratic moderate voters. The Democratic moderates will vote for Bernie. It's the swing voters in the middle who we used to call them Reagan Democrats.
Right.
We
used to call them blue dogs.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of different names, and this also includes the independents. And so that's where the fear is. Again,
and we have to remember that this is a center right country. As much as everyone in this room wishes that wasn't the case, it is the case. Mm-hmm. And we have to go after the people in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Ohio, even maybe Florida and Texas, which are all sort of purplish right now, and get them on our side. And they're not necessarily going to vote for a Bernie Sanders. And people are going to like go crazy about this. And let me just say one thing. Okay. Yes. To be clear.
You mean to say one more thing?
One more thing. I have endorsed Bloomberg because somebody wrote in, and no, I'm not getting paid.
Okay, that's fine. Sarah, what do you think about all of this?
All of what Libby said?
All of what
except
we're talking about.
Except the not
about.
Getting paid part, because you know.
Yeah, no. So I think it's early. I think that we're having really like not nuanced conversations at this point because it's impossible to have a nuanced conversation. I think that the Russians are getting what they want if we're being pitted against each other and getting frustrated with each other as Democrats. I think this is part of a messy process called democracy, and I think we all need to stick together, be a little bit more kinder and gentler to each other, and think about what kind of country we want to see.
Speaking of which, what did you think about Buttigieg doing his thing on Bernie now? He's turned his ire on Bernie. What does he get out of it? He's not going to win, right?
Who knows? I mean, campaigns make strategic calls for the moment and for the immediate short-term victories. It's a messy game. There's a lot of money flying around. And I think Buttigieg must have determined that he has some sort of advantage in South Carolina if he says X or if he takes on certain positions, just like Elizabeth Warren got an enormous boom from her debate performance. Enormous. People had her out for the count. I know some people still do. I don't.
Did you point at me when you said some people still do?
I did, but we're on the radio, so nobody saw me.
Well, I don't think. So. Look, I think she's terrific. And I don't think she's going to win. And I think she's positioned beautifully to be, if Bernie wins,
Secretary of the Treasury.
No, to be Bernie's vice presidential nominee, though it's in the next state over from Bernie.
And they're both liberals.
Yeah. Wait a second.
Wait a second, Rosemary. The thing you got to know about Bernie is he doesn't deviate.
That's right.
You can't cover him or look at him at all and not know that.
So, in other words, he's not going to choose somebody who is either conservative or moderate conservative or even a little bit left moderate. He won't do that. That's not Bernie. So my bet is that Warren would be the candidate. Anyway, I'm reading more.
So let me just on Buttigieg for a second. You know, I think what he sees in it. So I felt all along that his big purpose in running this whole thing is to turn himself into a national candidate. He's got a lot of years left compared to most of the people
Buttigieg.
In this thing. Yeah. And so the problem is you get a Sanders win, and he's not going to find himself in the federal government. You get any of the moderates win, and he's got at least a cabinet position shot. He's got at least a shot at getting into a higher position. And so I think the attack on Bernie is because he would like to see at this point, if he doesn't win, that one of the moderates does.
Are you old enough, Jim, to remember the name Harold Stassen?
Mm-hmm. He's the Harold Stassen of politics. I call a lot of people that.
Harold Stassen once had a shot. And in every other election after that, he kept putting himself forward and, of course, getting nowhere.
Right.
And I have a feeling that would be Buttigieg.
Yeah, but see, I'm not sure he's, again, you're talking elections.
Well, he was at least a governor.
Yeah. No, he was a mayor. Oh, Stassen was.
Stassen.
Yeah. I think that Buttigieg will be a little more discerning in what he runs for in the future. And I think he'll probably, if the Democrats win, he'll probably end up on the cabinet.
Well, see, I think that's what he wants.
I think a lot of them
are.
Come on,
we were saying this about Beto O'Rourke not that long ago.
Yeah.
What happened to him?
He might end up on the ballot, on the cabinet,
too. He could be a good vice presidential candidate.
He could, but I think it's
all right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to the letters. We'll go and continue our conversation. Are you mumbling? Okay. No, we're good.
Sorry. I was just mumbling towards Sarah.
Murmuring, mumbling. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We will hear such letters right now.
Thank you, Joe. Jim says, hello, panel. As big a question of whether Sanders supporters will vote for someone else, it's equally concerning that many comments have recently been heard that people are saying that they just can't vote for him. I've seen this on news shows and read it in newspapers. Jim from Del Mar. Hey, possible?
The stuff coming out from the right-wing media on Bernie is just appalling right now. And then he said something really kind of reasonable about Cuba, and it wasn't as bad. Fidel wasn't as bad as he's been made out to be in the United States, which is so apparent. And he's just being clobbered, and it hasn't even begun. We haven't even gotten Rush Limbaugh or Trump started on him.
And dear panel, says Russ, I get the sense that the Democratic primaries are progressing like the old movie trope of a train hurtling towards a collapsed bridge.
Yep.
The one-third of primary voters who don't want to put Bernie is still outnumbering the voters who can get behind any of the other candidates. I expect Bernie to pick up another 7% in the general election and lose 60-40 to Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. Hopefully not.
Okay. Charlie from Oneonta. Stop the hand-wringing about Bernie. Populism is here. People are sick of the DNC and their elite control of who's running, and the centrist trope is bogus look where that got us in the last go-round. It's time for a change. Embrace it. And that's from somebody.
I don't disagree.
Charlie.
There's nothing wrong with a group of progressives rising up and saying they want the party to change how they do things. Mm-hmm. And it's a big machine, and it's a powerful machine, and they feel smited by that machine. And so I think it's a perfectly natural consequence that they would be pushing hard. Okay. I don't see a problem with that.
Okay, but one more thing, and that is the concept of the DNC. Now, the DNC, to the minds of many Bernieites, that's the way they say that it got stolen. The DNC was clearly in the Hillary camp the last time. And they did things, Donna Brazile and some of the other folks did things, which really got the Bernieites infuriated and convinced that they were done in. I think if the DNC has a brain in its head, And I agree with Rosemary when she keeps saying Perez is not exactly
the
leader of all times.
No.
If the DNC has a brain in its head, it will try to avoid doing what they did the last time.
I mean, they already made a big misstep with changing the rules on the debate after they'd lost minority candidates badly needed for the party. Their voice, their presence was so important, and then changed the rules for a billionaire. I mean, come on, you're just playing into the into the feeling that it's all rigged.
And then Judy writes to us, Bernie can win. I find it so funny that establishment folks are scrambling around trying to figure out some way to stop Bernie from getting the nomination. If Democratic establishment really, in capital letters, wanted to stop Bernie, they would convince four or five other candidates to give up. But this ego drives everything. No one will give up. Please stop talking down Bernie. He is inspiring to so many. And look at his crowd sizes. This is not a takeover, merely the will of the people.
So I actually think there's a fair point to be made there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I
yeah,
think
yes, that,
I think the point Sarah keeps making that we are looking at a populist possibility here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, the opposite of the Tea Party, it hasn't gelled the way it did. My worry in that space, and again, it's just a worry because I don't know that Bernie couldn't win it. I think Bernie can get a lot of votes. The question is, again, as everyone knows, I'm looking at these damn electoral votes, and that scares me more than anything. Turn Texas over.
Right,
it's a whole different ballgame.
Turn Florida over.
But I just don't see it
not
happening
gonna
at the
happen.
Moment.
Bernie.
There is really a question as to whether there is a mood in this country by those people who think that they have been rejected, thrown into the dung heap and everything else, who voted for Trump because they thought he would make a huge difference in their favor, which he has not, although some of them still do. And then between those people, I really think there's a good chance that if people really want to change, they may want this change agent.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it was interesting, Alan, because Rich Honan, when he was here before the when he was arguing in favor of Trump before the election, was saying, you know, that we just need somebody who's going to tear down politics as usual. Right. Well,
yeah,
that has happened. I think they were surprised by what replaced it. But and I think some of the Bernie people are saying the same thing. We need to tear down the existing system. The real question becomes, in my mind, then what governs after? What
That's
does a Bernie government look like?
Right.
And, you know, we haven't even started that conversation.
Well, and toward
yet,
what direction?
We have to get through the election first.
We do know. I mean, look at his platform. It's not terrible. You know, we'd at least be headed.
He's right on everything he says.
Well,
no, if you watch Bernie on TV and he starts talking about medical care for all and you name it, I watched him the other day and really I don't think personally I wasn't thinking that he was the candidate, but he said everything that I believe.
Well, what can he get done?
It's execution with Bernie. Mm-hmm. For the past 30 years, he's talked the same lines. You can go back to when he was mayor in Burlington, and he was saying the same things then as he is now. Trevor Noah did a hysterical kind of little skit on that. But he's never gotten anything through, ever. And he has no way, and he is so uncompromising, which has kind of brave, and that's part of why he has an appeal to some people. He does not compromise. So how's he going to talk to the Senate?
Well, he sticks.
How's he going to talk to the House?
He sticks to his guns, and he makes the point, as you have just said. You know, it may be a good thing. People say he's the real thing, and then when he gets there, he'll make a change.
At least I know why he's running, and it definitely doesn't seem to be. It's about himself. It's about his vision, and he holds that very closely.
Well, I've interviewed him many, many, many times, maybe 100, and I can tell you it's all about himself.
Well, you
and
have
there's
to
nothing
have,
wrong with that.
You have to have a certain sense, a strong ego and a strong sense of self to put yourself out there the way that he does. And I am not a Bernie supporter. I'm not. No one cares about who I'm voting for president. But
I care.
I have no idea. But I will say that I at least I understand. You know, when you listen to him, you understand his vision for America. It pierces through the ego. It makes sense.
David says, Bernie, what next? Good morning. As someone who watched Bernie from the beginning of his political career, I've noticed that he's always surrounded himself with good, qualified staff. I voted for Hillary last time and will vote for the vote Democratic this time. Regards, David.
All right.
Well, we definitely are going to be an advantage if Trump is gone. Whoever will come into office will appoint better people. Trump's appointees are all designed to undo government from the inside.
And Trump has found all these mechanisms to avoid even going through his friendly Senate.
Yep.
Here's
so
an
imagine
interesting...
if the Senate changes, then you're really talking about him just using every trick in the book. We're going to have actings. We're going to have.
We're going to have dictatorship.
I mean, this new director of intelligence. Oh my God, he's a horrible diplomat. He is his one characteristic. Well, he has two. He is smart. He's not an idiot like Trump, but he's a complete Trump loyalist.
Well, and,
wow,
and
that's what you want.
The reason they're putting him through the way they are is because there's very good likelihood he could not get confirmed by this Senate, which is staggering when you consider how much in the pocket of Trump this Senate is.
So Jamie writes to us, it's way worse when they just stayed home. Small sample size, admittedly, but I know three of what Alan called Bernieites who switched to Trump when he was, quote, robbed of the nomination last time, Jamie.
Gosh.
Dumb.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have more letters, and we welcome yours. Please send them to panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable for this Monday morning. It is 5 minutes past 10 o'clock on the 24th of February. Listening to the group Simmel, they're going to be opening for Dermot Kennedy at Upstate Concert Hall in Clifton Park on the 1st of March. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org.
And how do you spell Simmel again?
S-Y-M-L.
S-Y-M-L. I thought it was a Yiddish word, but it turns out not to be.
What is it?
No. And
anybody want to tell me what it is?
I it's a group. I don't know. You want to know what it is?
Oh, it's a group.
Yeah.
S-Y-M-L.
Yeah.
Simmel.
S-Y-M-L.
So. Okay. So here we heard from Beth, who says, faux Bernie's faux votes. Oh. Dear esteemed panel, as a teenager, I was a young Republican, and during our trainings, they taught us how to register as a Democrat so we could get the enemy's literature, in quotes, and to vote in the primaries for the weakest Democratic candidate. I have heard Trump suggesting that at one of his rallies last week, I wonder what percentage of the votes that Bernie is getting is based on this strategy. Signed, Beth from Del Mar. Now, I'm telling you what I was considering doing as a Massachusetts unenrolled voter who can vote in either primary. I was thinking about voting for Bill Weld.
So for what it's worth, if you look at the numbers on this stuff, it would be very hard for that to really change anything.
I agree.
You would need a huge number of people. You would see turnout numbers that looked very different than they do. You would see people living in different congressional, different parts of the state. So at the moment, what can I say? As a data geek, you don't see that happening. I'd still, kind of. Emotionally, I'd like to believe it, but I just can't find the evidence.
So, what was turnout in Nevada, by the way? Do we know? We've been watching turnout in the other contests.
I know that Joe will come up with that. In the meantime, I'm going to read a very fast letter.
The Nevada caucuses are on track to break a voter turnout record. A volunteer counts votes during. It's
high.
On track to break. It was high.
And the Hispanic vote was terrific.
And the early voting made a big difference. Although interestingly, the early voting broke slightly differently than the late voting, according to
Buttigieg.
Well, according to a lot of people, but especially Buttigieg,
it matched the 2016 turnout.
Kelly in Old Chatham, which is very interesting, Joe, when you think about it, right? Because if it matched the 2016 when the Democrats took the House of Representatives, 2018. Oh,
okay.
Oh, I see.
Better.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's fine. But 2016 is what you had. You didn't have the contest that you had this time, and you still brought in as many people you would think would be more.
Eight is what you'd like to see.
I see.
Right.
So, Kelly in Old Chatham says, my kids have grown up on the importance of voting. In the weekly phone conversation yesterday with my college-going son, he came right out and said, if Bernie doesn't win the Democratic nomination, most of his friends are declaring that they will not vote in the November election. I'm slightly horrified by this news, encouraging him to tell others to vote no matter what. But this seems to be a reality, and that's Kelly in Old Chatham.
Well, then we have a new challenge as Democrats to reach those people and talk to them. And I think that this is a really important moment then for this campaign, whoever the nominee is going to be.
I love your optimism.
I hope it's not misplaced.
I don't know if it's misplaced. I think anything can happen these days, really. Luigi says, can Bloomberg run independent? If Bloomberg loses the Democratic nomination and runs as an independent, do you think he can draw enough from both sides to win? Bloomberg is the only one who can beat Trump, and that's from Luigi.
He has said he's not going to do that.
Yeah, he couldn't.
And it would be a terrible error, and he would draw from the Democrats, not from the Trumpers.
You know, I have a question. Can Bloomberg spend as much money as he's spending if he's not a candidate? Because because of donation limits and what have you?
There's no limit.
Since
you're
not, you can do
money.
Anything. Yeah.
It's your own money.
But what I'm saying is, if he wasn't. Oh, right. Okay.
He can't
donate.
So, in
other words, if he had opted into the public financing, then he could.
No. There is a limit on per. So, I can only put 2,000 or whatever the number is right now into a candidate.
Right.
But I can put an arbitrary amount into a PAC that supports that candidate.
Yeah. Right.
So he is saying he will put a significant amount of money into the overall Democratic committees and the PACs.
And he has in the past.
He has, actually.
Well, because and what I'm seeing in, from his campaign so far is sort of a boom to Democrats generally.
No kidding.
Well, because of the money, not because of the candidate, though.
No, but the money
is... And by the way, the ads are terrific.
The ads are wonderful, and the money is what candidates need. I mean, yeah, it's about the money. If you don't have money to be able to run a decent campaign, you're not going to win. And so his ads are terrific, but he's put a lot of money into congressional and U.S. Senate races. He's put a lot of money into Planned Parenthood. He's put a lot of money into gun control, into climate change. So, yeah.
So what do you think we see tomorrow night as far as his debate performance?
I think he's going to be better. I know he has to be better.
It can't be worse.
But then again, we're still in,
hard to be
we're
worse.
Still in a bubble.
Well, not only that, the last time they were all after him to kill him.
Right. That's
going to be the
this time
thing
they're going to be after Bernie.
After Bernie.
Right. That's going to be
And but I think he learned. I'm hoping he learned from that performance. He said he did, and we'll have to see what happens. I mean, this is a guy who's. I don't think he's used to having to be in that position of being on the defensive too often.
Anyway, Roger says, Bloomberg versus Bernie. Hi, panel. For what it's worth, an avid 20-something Bernie supporter, I know I will not vote if Bloomberg is the nominee. This is a person who has in the past traveled to other states for weeks at a time to canvass. That type of enthusiasm is lost if Bloomberg is the candidate, at least among young Bernieites. Roger from Pleasant Valley.
Then just stay home and let's reelect Donald Trump, because that's the result.
No, I think the difference is that Roger's talking about the primary. We don't know the answer yet, and those statements are statements of people who feel passionately about their candidate.
Right, but they just said
that was not the primary.
They're saying it now.
Said if Bloomberg is
if
the
Bloomberg
candidate,
is it,
that's
I'm
after
done.
Primary.
I don't think Bloomberg's going to be the guy, so I'm not worried about it.
Zach says Bloomberg, dear panels. If the well, by the way, Sarah, I know that that's what you're thinking, and I have every respect for it. But I have to tell you, I've been talking to a lot of people, and a lot of those people tell me it's Bloomberg.
Okay.
They do.
I believe you.
I'm not lying. Why would I lie? Zach says, because my mouth is moving. Zach says, Bloomberg. Dear panel, if the Democrats allow the billionaire plutocrat Bloomberg to purchase the nomination, it will utterly destroy any notion that the Dems are a party of the working class. That would be suicidal for the party and cause further exodus to the other side that started with Clinton in the 90s. We can't replace a kleptocrat with an oligarch.
These are big words. Them are fighting words.
Trump is both. He is an oligarch, too. Why do we keep forgetting that?
Right.
Why are Democrats buying into the ridiculous idea that he's the billionaire of the working class? It's crazy.
And Barbara says, voting. Hello, panel. Find some sunshine somewhere.
Thank you.
The pendulum swings to extremes both ways, and that stops swinging in the middle. So what? Now we have leadership, parenthesis, we can call the orange man a leader, an end parent, to the far right destroying the Constitution. Then Bernie is elected and swings to the right after 4 years. Swings to the right after 4 years. If he makes it and we vote again, perhaps we end up with a good constitutional majority leadership, whatever that is, and that is from Barbara in Rhinebeck, New York. I think there's some logical inconsistencies.
Yeah, but I think Barbara's main point is that she's getting at this insecurity and anxiety that we all feel that Democrats feel. I shouldn't make any assumptions, but that Democrats feel in terms of concern about ideological shifts, and that concern I think is stronger with moderate Democrats.
Okay, panel, isn't it possible that Russians and Trump want Bernie as a nominee because they have some nasty compromat on him and are planning to release it then? Hate to be a conspiracy theorist, but it looks like it's the only way Trump and the Russians operate right now. Thank you, Maria. Who knows?
Hard to believe, but you never know. But, right. You know, there are plenty of pictures of Bernie with, you know, standing next to socialists and mm-hmm. communists.
Exactly.
Of course, there's pictures of anybody who's been a senator or a congressperson for many, many years being in the same place as all those people.
I mean, you're right. His actual record will be damning enough in many places in the United States. His honeymoon in the Soviet Union, his defense of Fidel Castro. I saw one today that said he blames the U.S. for the Cold War. It's hard not to blame. There were only two parties to it.
Anyway, Juan wrote to us, open primaries. Can the panel illuminate us on who the 2016 Bernie or bust primary voters were in Michigan, Minnesota, and Michigan. How many times has Joe told you to be careful of what you're writing? I would like to remind the panel, each of the formerly mentioned states have open primaries. Thanks. Thank you, Martin.
Do you mean Wisconsin?
Yeah.
You know, we're all like wringing our hands over this while Clarence Thomas's wife is heading up a purge.
Jeez.
In the federal government, looking for every single government employee who is disloyal to Trump. I mean, this is dictatorship 101.
Bloomberg, stay home. For those of us who have lived through these three unfortunate terms of Bloomberg, he is the one candidate running who would make us stay home. Conversations with friends have confirmed he is widely despised. And that's from Seth. I have had the opposite conversations with people, but who knows?
That's the beauty of America.
Yeah, it depends who we are. Roger says Sanders versus Trump. The Democrats are in disarray, are similar to Republicans in 2016, both party establishment factions who were and are opposed to populists outside the mainstream. For Bernie to win, he has to do three things: emphasize Trump as a pathological liar, which he did in 60 Minutes yesterday, emphasize global warming and appreciation of science, and tone down slightly his my way or the highway. It would help if he chose either Warren or Klobuchar as a running mate. Roger in Utica.
Well, Klobuchar.
He's for 30 years he hasn't done it, so good luck for now.
And Steve writes, millennials voting. Hi, panel. How many millennials are on the panel today? I think you're doing a disservice with the amount of generalizations you're making about us. I'm a millennial that supports Bernie. I'll vote for any Democrat over Trump, with the exception of Bloomberg because he is so unfit for office and we the people need to demand better. Thanks, Steve in Pittsville. So can somebody just help me here? What are the ages on millennials again?
Well, I'm Gen X, and I think I'm the youngest one here. I'm 40. I'm on the verge of 42. But there's an argument that Gen Xers, who are sort of at the tail end of that generation, are kind of blend in with millennials. And I hope that the listener was listening to the first part of the panel where I made a strong argument about the diversity of opinions of millennials and how we should respect their views. I'm glad he wrote in.
Could somebody answer the question?
It would be considered early 90s to early aughts of being birthed. Being born between early 90s
I think
and early 2000s.
Isn't it mid-80s? Because I was born in 78.
Mid-80s. I think mid-80s still is Gen X.
Is that? Okay.
So how old would they be now? Do the math.
Well, 20, 25.
All the way up until
35.
Up until the mid-30s.
Early 30s, yeah. Early mid-30s.
So,
yeah.
So the older, you know, again, the as people get older, there tends to be more voting. So, of course, any younger group, you just see a lesser number. Mm-hmm. I think the real issue has been we are not making this up out of whole cloth because we disrespect the youth.
Because we dislike them.
It's based on the fact that historically the number of people who could vote in that group versus the number of people who do vote in that group are less. So, for example, right now people in their 60s and over tend to vote at the highest level of participation of any voting group.
So let me ask the panel question.
You know, again, the other thing is when you talk about individual people, just remember that how many of them are coming to vote.
So Sarah's right. According to the Millennial Manual, it's people born between 1981 and 1996. Go ahead.
Okay, so let me ask the panel this question. Is there anybody that the Democrats could nominate that other people on this panel would stay home about? In other words, is there anybody who's running?
Trump.
We've been hearing all these. No, we've been hearing.
Yeah, they said he's running unopposed.
Getting these Bloomberg letters.
No, not a single person. I think that Trump has sown evil in this country, and I will vote for anyone.
Yes,
anyone.
I agree.
But okay, it isn't the Democrats who you worry about. It's the moderates and others. Okay, and Steve says millennial voting. How many millennials? Did we do that one?
Yes,
on the panel?
We just
yeah,
did.
I think you're doing it. Yeah, we did that one. So sorry.
Well, my son just wrote me and said the millennials are from 1980 to 1997, and he's one of them. He's
well, yeah, so that was within a year of what we said, so that's good.
It's, you know, rounding off.
81, 97.
Rounding off to the nearest decibel.
Ask him who he's voting for.
Sanders.
I think I know.
Dear esteemed panel. Dear esteemed panel. Once again, the Democratic Party leaves me ashamed and embarrassed. They offer not a single candidate who can beat Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. If we run to the left with Sanders, we will surely endure Trump for another 4 disgusting years and probably lose the House. The Senate will remain firmly in Trump's control. Trumpists, formerly known as Republicans, will be delighted to hang the socialist label around our necks for decades. This election will be George McGovern all over again. When will the Democrats ever learn to stop shooting ourselves in the foot? We deserve to lose. I don't think so.
When I look to the right, Sarah is saying
no.
Meanwhile,
we deserve
Rosemary is nodding yes.
Yeah, I mean, you can knock the boomers and say, oh, boomers, but it's based on data. And we have seen it. Please listen to us.
Yes, but we deserve to lose.
No,
with
we
this
don't.
Guy, because, with this guy in the White House, already showing the fascist tendencies that we all know about.
His point is that there's no strategy or long-term thinking or just common sense in what's happening right now.
Then
he
say
is
that.
Correct in that.
And I definitely don't want to knock boomers, right? We need to listen to history. We need to listen to everybody in this country, and definitely people with lived experience in American politics should have a voice to folks who are just arriving on the scene. I just have a very different view, which is we the people get to decide whether or not Trump is president. We get to decide, and not the candidate.
I don't have disrespect you do for millennials, not from what I've seen so far. But what I said coming in, and I hold to this, is that if Bernie is the candidate, which is looking at this moment that he very likely will be, then there's huge responsibility on the millennials who support him. They must come out and
vote. Must
agree.
Vote. That's right. If you had that group vote with the kind of numbers that you see at the upper age brackets, it would drastically change.
They outnumber the boomers
now. And for what it's worth, right, the claim was that in 2008, you were going to see that happen for Obama. He was going to bring in a lot of new voters, things like that. And the answer is the percentage that it changed was small.
But he did bring in a lot of black voters.
For him.
He brought in voters, but again, he didn't change the total number. There were a lot more people voting that year, but it wasn't coming from those groups
now. I think we're rewriting history because in 2018, it was black women who saved our election.
And I think they're going to do it again.
I agree. So we need to pay attention to what they're saying.
Yep.
Anyway, we heard
totally
from.
Agree.
Do you want more or not?
Unfortunately, in 2016, it was white women who gave it to Trump.
Right,
white women
right.
in the suburbs.
And anyway, Bernie says, Tommy from Albany, I have a prediction panel. Bernie will win the nomination and you will all support him and even vote for him, underlined, and you'll love it.
Well,
certainly
hardly,
two out of three.
Hardly,
but actually,
yeah.
I personally would be fine. I don't, you know. Just should anyone know, I have still not endorsed anyone. I still can't even make up my mind. But so far, there's no one in this election who I would not vote for, who I would vote against.
Right. You mean over Trump?
Over Trump.
I think we all agree to that.
I'll vote whoever's on the Democratic line in November. Mm-hmm. Period. End of story.
But as I keep saying, you guys aren't the important group.
I know.
Right.
Okay.
We know
so Janet says Elizabeth Warren. I don't understand why Bernie supporters wouldn't get behind Warren in a big way. Her policies are equally progressive and passionately argued, but she seems more grounded, more energetic, and so well-informed. Plus, it's time for a woman. I think she has to be careful about blaming the rich and squarely put her criticisms at the system if she wants to get the vote of people like my brother in wealthy Naples, Florida. Janet.
So, I agree with you more, Janet.
If you got into the – if Warren ended up in the general election – I think she'd have a very good chance of outperforming Bernie. The problem is you got to get there.
And she ain't getting there this way.
Yet.
Well, why do you say yet? I mean, I get
she's
it.
She's an optimist. And we need a voice of hope in this panel.
Yeah, but also I know.
Millennials are good. There's lots of chance. It's early yet.
I know Professor Sarah, and I know she speaks on the basis of evidence. So what is the evidence that Warren could turn it around right now?
She gained like 27 percentage points in the polls overnight. She raised $14 million in an hour. Just wait.
Okay. Just wait and see. Ashley writes to the panel.
She gained 27
good morning,
points in
panel.
The percentage. And where?
Did you want to say something?
I'm questioning. 27
the predictions
percentage
in Nevada,
points.
I believe it was, that she gained in the polls after the debate, she gained a bizarre number of.
You do know she lost in Nevada, right? Like, she didn't come in either first or second or third.
But she didn't come in eighth or ninth.
But her percentage was higher than
what
percent.
Kind of an argument is that? She didn't,
actually,
she didn't
what,
come
what
in first,
is,
second, or
what,
third.
What is interesting
no
is she actually did better, according to the beliefs on polling, because you can't see the actual votes, but she did better in the later voting than she did in the early voting.
But she
which
still
does
didn't
imply
win.
That, no, agreed. But it does imply that the debate performance did make a significant difference. And again, she needs a stellar debate in South Carolina and a good showing, and she could be back in. Anyway.
Okay, Ashley writes, I support Bernie and will vote for him in the primary. If he doesn't win the nomination, I will vote for whomever does, unless I see the DNC conspiring against him as they did in 2016 election process. If the DNC does not deserve my vote, if the DNC does, it does not deserve my vote, and they aren't getting it. Ashley from Cobleskill.
So that is the scariest letter we've received today, because if he doesn't get it, who is going to say, how are you going to prove it wasn't the DNC, quote unquote, that did it? Somebody else will have won. By definition, that means some Democrat will have outperformed or outdone something, or superdelegates will vote, or, you know, there's going to be something.
Well, I always agree with you, except that not this time, because... Truly, it is not clear to me that the Democrats didn't show their hand the last time. I think they did. I think the DNC did, if you have...
I don't disagree with that.
In other words,
that,
they loaded the game. And therefore, whether I like it or not, it's the way that it was. And it may well be that way again. And that's what this guy's warning about.
All right, we have 90 seconds, so we'll try to get a couple more letters in.
Good morning, says Mike from Kingston. Driving through Pennsylvania this last weekend, which I do quite often, there were two bumper stickers / posters I saw, Bernie's and Trump's. In 2016, I assure you, there was no Clinton but bumper stickers in Pennsylvania. Bernie can win. Mike from Kingston. And then very quickly,
bumper sticker politics.
Bernie and Stacey Abrams, 2020. If that doesn't bring out the millennials, nothing will. Dwayne.
You can keep going.
Diane, I'm so sorry. And then finally, Levy says swaying the middle. The Republican Party wastes almost no time and effort aiming to sway the middle. Energizing the base has worked for them. The Democratic Party has wasted a number of election cycles trying to manipulate the middle. This is a failed methodology. I remember when Trump wasn't electable. Support the base and youth energy. If you support the middle in hopes to sway the middle, get ready for Trump's second term, leave on. And you know what? They're already blaming each other for what's going to happen or what they think is going to happen. Can you imagine if the Democrats lose what everybody will be saying?
Yeah.
This one, that one.
Yeah,
the other one.
It'll be the circular finger pointing.
A finger pointing firing squad?
Oh, yeah. Well, it won't be a firing squad.
Which finger?
How many?
Which finger?
Yeah, that's right. Which finger?
Everybody will be.
Figure that
everybody
out.
Will have be at fault. Nobody will take responsibility.
We'll take a break. We welcome your letters. We have one more segment here. We will continue and we'll go on. Panel@WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here. Sarah Rogerson. We have we have Jim Hendler, Libby Post, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We have been talking a little bit about Mike Bloomberg, but he was Twitter suspended 70 pro Bloomberg accounts for the campaign's copy and paste strategy. Jim, can you explain this to us?
So, the
and why that's bad?
Yeah. So, in theory, Twitter wants only humans who are doing what they want to do. In practice, God knows what that looks like. But so, if you had somebody from the Bloomberg campaign going out to a bunch of influencers and saying, "Share this message, this concept," and then they can do it on their own, that's within Twitter. When you start saying, right, we will pay you to tweet exactly this thing as opposed to paying Twitter to advertise it, then what you're doing is you're advertising without advertising, in a sense. And they claim that that
so
was
monetary.
A violation.
Oh, everything so. Is. It's capitalism.
Well,
we don't talk enough.
But it's monetary in two ways. It's not so much that they want the advertising revenue. It's that their claim is, if you did it as an advertisement, it would come out with a tag. When you do it the way you're doing it, you've got all these accounts.
Right,
that,
and it looks
and these
like
are
something
big.
Else. Yeah.
Right.
But that's
interesting. Isn't it essentially spam? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, except the rules of spam on Twitter are much more complex. So, for example, anytime you tweet anything that criticizes Trump, you're going to get 1,000 responses. Are they from, people who are sitting around doing things or what? You know, Bernie, you have the Bernie bro Twitter effect, right? Alan's talked about this in the past. Again, the belief is they're not being paid to do that. They're voluntarily doing it. The Trump ones, there were Trump trolls who were paid. They were kicked out. So at least Twitter is trying to be fair and say anybody who's paying for people to just automatically say their thing.
So well, there's Twitter, I'm sorry.
Well, there's nothing wrong with individuals doing it for their own individual purposes. There's a thing called a Twitter storm, which you do where you galvanize a group of advocates. Or, but the problem is when you have one user with like 150 different shadow accounts, that's where you also – it's both payment and proxy. You have to be an individual user.
A multi-million-dollar strategy from the Bloomberg camp to hire more than 500 deputy digital organizers. There's a title. Jim, deputy digital organizers and pay them $2,500 a month for 20 to 30 hours a week, according to the Wall Street Journal.
How do I get one of those games?
So let me ask this question because I don't know. We know that the owner of Amazon, Bezos, is Democratic and like that. I want to know whether, and Facebook, we pretty well have an idea where they are. But do we know who runs Twitter and whether they have an announced political agenda?
It used to be it was a female owned and operated. It was the original CEOs were two women, and then Twitter sort of fell out of favor right before the right before Twitter came back in the uprising in Egypt. You guys remember?
You guys
have to remember the long, there's a long arc of history in Twitter, and then Twitter was almost dying again before Trump was elected president, and then it came back. So I don't know who owns it now or who's in control of it.
Well,
the
Trump
CEO
has certainly made
Dorsey.
It, right?
There you go.
What did you say,
Joe? Jack Dorsey.
Jack Dorsey. What?
I never knew Twitter had a female owners, and in fact, there's very little in cyberspace that's been controlled by women. So that's.
I mean, I think that's why I joined.
And he is a Democrat, by the way. Just not that it matters, but there you go.
Yeah.
Shall I read or not?
Yes.
Okay, I'll do that. Tori says, millennials. Just writing in to say there's a subset of millennials from about 1981 to 1990 called Xennials, X-E-N-N-I-A-L-S. We are the last to remember a world without the internet, but young enough to be fast early adopters.
Oh, I was wrong. Twitter was created by Jack Dorsey. I must have had it confused
no
with another platform.
There's no women on the major platforms.
I take it back.
Teresa says, Libby, I am shocked that Libby is supporting Bloomberg with his racist, sexist views. Let us just know that Libby is...
Her hands are to the sky.
Back in the chair, looking up at the thing.
All I can say is this. He's apologized for stop and frisk. He's learned from that particular thing. And if he's president, you won't have... those kinds of policies on the national level. If we expect, we are not electing a saint. We are electing a president. And politics is down and dirty, and this campaign is going to be that way. And yes, he's a 70-something-year-old rich white man. Do I expect him to be perfect on all of these issues? Do I expect him never to utter anything sexist? No. But show me somebody who hasn't. Bernie has. They all have. Give me a break. You know, the bottom line is who I think can beat Trump, and I think it's Bloomberg. That's the bottom line for me. I'm just being pragmatic. I know that people are shocked by this, but I'm just being pragmatic about what is going to happen.
And then we heard from Karen from Albany, the Bloomberg Congratulatory Committee. It is almost as if the panel is watching alternative caucus results. You all keep going on about electability and discounting Bernie while he keeps producing impressive caucus results. Instead, you all seem comfortable endorsing Trump-lite Bloomberg, a racist, misogynist billionaire who until recently was a Republican, Karen from Albany.
I think I missed that part where we endorsed Bloomberg.
No, I want you to know, Karen, that you're making that up.
I want my card back.
It's
yeah.
not that even.
You're making that up, and it's not right. If you listen to a panel discussion, you hear many different views coming from many different places. You have just heard Libby say she's announcing for Bloomberg. But the fact of the matter is that we have discussed everything, including the reason that Sanders is winning here.
Yeah.
But she is right. So far, Bloomberg has not won a single caucus vote.
Of course, he hasn't been on the ballot.
Right. So,
he was a Democrat to begin with. Let's be clear about this. In the 80s, he was a Democrat. He wanted to run in New York City, and the Democratic machine said no. So then he became.
Not the first time.
Right. He became a Republican, and
John
he won.
John V. Lindsay.
Right. And he won. And then he became an independent because he couldn't stand what the Republicans had turned into. And now he's back to his roots, which was being a Democrat. I mean, you know. This is not a perfect art. This is messy, and this is what happens. You have to, we're basically, the choice is the lesser of two evils. It always has been, and it always will be.
And then we hear, by the way, I'm so delighted you're all on the panel and that you all express different views, and it's great to hear you, Libby.
Thank you, dear.
Thank you. Bernie and the Millennials. Hi, panel. If Bernie wins, I hope the Millennials are prepared to work until they perish to pay for all those freebies. Now it's daycare supposedly to be funded by the 1%. Try actually being funded by the 99%. Be well, from Kathy.
He hasn't even been elected. We're all working until we perish.
Nikki says, Supreme Court, dear panel, when discussing, yes, I know, because I keep working and working and working and working. Nobody can stop me from working.
You're a good example.
I try to bring home some bacon. No, I love doing what I do. Nikki says, Supreme Court, dear panel, when discussing who should be the Democratic nominee, I think it's important to remember that we are not just voting for president, but we are voting for the Supreme Court, for what the Supreme Court will look like from decades to come. Nikki in Wilmington, Vermont. Hey, Nikki, I argued that till
everybody
I was
blue out there
in the
listen
face.
To Nikki. That's right. That is, to me, even more important than who's the president in the sense of running the country. It's who's the person who's picking those next
and
Supreme
Court.
And
if you look at what happened, Jim, if you looked at what happened with Sotomayor yesterday or the day before, in which she literally got up and did something almost never done, complained about the partisanship on the Supreme Court, boy, was she right. Good for her.
Yep. Hear, hear.
Karen said, what Nevada results shows? If the Democrats really feel Bernie Sanders will lose in a general election, all the other candidates other than Biden should drop out now after South Carolina. Yes. They are spoilers at this point, not enough to support to actually win the nomination. If their voters got behind Biden, especially Mayor Pete and Klobuchar's supporters, there would be a path to Biden to win the nomination. He may be old, but he's our best chance of removing Trump from office. Look at the states that are must-wins for Democrats. Biden can win them. Against Trump, Bernie can't. Thanks, Karen.
So the one thing I'll say about that is I've been saying since we started talking about this 47 years ago or whenever it was,
that
South Carolina is probably the first really important primary because the electorate there looks like the electorate in the states that are going to matter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That said, it's still early. You still don't have Bloomberg. I mean, Super Tuesday is the biggie.
But and
I
Bernie
think,
has traction.
But I think seeing what happens in South Carolina is going to be interesting.
Yes, and Bernie has traction. Yeah. And you can't deny the fact that he was way behind and now he's 4 points behind Biden. And so it could happen. Roseanne says, Bernie, I'm so, S-O-O-O-O-O-O, I'm so tired of hearing people say Bernie won't be able to get anything passed. Let's just remember he won't be destroying our Constitution or alienating our allies in Europe, and he might even be able to bring our country back to some normalcy and making the white supremacists go back under their rocks. Roseanne from Stormville.
Yeah, he'll do all that, but he still won't get anything done.
Nora says, I live in Vermont. I have been a Bernie supporter for many, many years. I was very disappointed in his handling of the last election after he did not win the nomination. Although he did tell his supporters to vote for Hillary, he did not do so forcefully or repeatedly. I certainly hope he will be very, very proactive if he does not get the nomination this time. Although I prefer to vote my passion, let's shift our passion for a particular candidate to a passion for our country, which will suffer possibly irreversibly if Trump gets another term. And that's from Nora.
Thank you, Nora.
Mm-hmm. Well
good letter.
And then we heard from Stu, and that's S-T-E-W, Stu, as in, you know.
As in beef.
Exactly.
Okay.
My point. Stu in Kingston, I think what many of the panel who are anti-Bernie are missing is that with the whirlwind changes technology has brought in the last 20 years, many people are looking for a change in government that will match the level of change. They voted for change with Obama, got the same old half measures that they voted for Trump to shake things up and got chaos. They will vote for Bernie for faith, believability, trust, and a real chance for change. Remember, Obama was labeled a socialist, and he delivered the economy back to Wall Street. Fear labels only scare the sacred. Go, Sarah. I really enjoy her voice of thoughtful reason to the panel. Amen.
Thanks. To be clear, I'm not a Bernie supporter or anti-Bernie, but
what
I appreciate
you?
That.
So what are you?
An optimistic.
I care. Come I love. Okay, not to sound like Pollyanna, but I deeply, deeply love this country and everyone in this room, and respect the listeners and all of the people who are having like really meaningful debates about things that are deeply important to them that come from places like having a sick parent or losing a child or not being able to pay rent or having been homeless. And that matters. That matters to all of us. And I get really discouraged when I hear letters come in blaming people, attacking Libby, coming after each other. We're all on the same team. So that's where my comments come from, because if I have a microphone in front of my face, I'm going to be speaking about how we can come together and disagree in ways that are important, that move the needle
right.
forward. What's the phrase? Let axe sharpen axe, or, you know, let's grind it out, but let's be nice to each other.
Have you considered running for office?
I was going to say, you got my vote. I have my new candidate.
I have considered hiding under my covers and crying. But
can we all say amen?
We're out of time, but thank you all very much.
Wow. Shocking.
How'd that happen?
We'll be back right after this.